Go ahead, Ian.
Da-da-da-da-da! Welcome to another Tech Grumps. Yes, your weekly, well, somewhat weekly, annoying, ranty, fun, enjoyable rants, or something like that. Anyway, on with the show. We have today, as usual, the Tom Morris.
Hello. I'm now an object, am I?
Say no more.
This means I've evolved into a C++ life form.
An object of derision, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. And we've also got Nick Ferrier. Say hello, Nick.
Hello there. I'm just introspecting Tom's methods.
Oh, God. You dirty man.
And as we just heard, we now have a female voice. And
hello.
That female voice is by the amazing Kaz Bucket.
Hello, I'm a lady, allegedly.
You are our first lady on this very sausage festive show.
Sausage festive?
Yeah.
Well, I like a bit of sausage every now and then.
I thought you were going to say sausage infested, but...
Okay, so on with the show. We're going to try and keep this one a little bit shorter than last week, at least.
Not difficult. Right. Not fucking difficult.
So,
although with Ian on the show.
And they say women can talk for England.
Okay. So, should we kick off some topics then? You got Tom, you got the list. So.
Okay, at the top of our list, I think data portability has to be at the top of our list, just purely randomly. Actually, based on alphabetical order, too.
Oh, okay. Right, well, this is my one. Right.
Canvas comes before data portability.
Yeah.
Photo / Flickr is what I've written it down as.
Ugh, useless.
Okay. Right, well, I'll tell you what, data portability, we've already done a massive rant about it, but...
Are we talking dataportability.org, or just
No, we're
concept?
Talking about actual right. concept. So I just switched from Tesco to Sainsbury's, and...
for your weekly shop, or...?
Yeah, for my monthly shop.
Right.
And the problem is, it's great, actually, Sainsbury's service is actually very good, and actually... Nick's going to explain why I shouldn't shop with Tesco anyway. I can't remember why he said, but there was a reason. It's great. But there's a problem. All my favourites are on Tesco. So I had to sit there going with like two browsers. Well, no, the problem is that Tesco site doesn't actually load in my browser. So I had to sit there on my mobile phone and my browser or my computer and manually copy everything over. And although I haven't got that much stuff, it was a pain in the ass. And so,
well, I have
really, really a better way of doing that. Good.
I hope you're not trying to find Tesco's own brand stuff in Sainsbury's or the other way around.
Oh, no, definitely not.
The add to favourites. Where's my bloody Tesco's value product gone?
What's going on here? What kind of crap store is
it? Comes
there?
In orange packaging now.
The weird thing, though, is actually, just a side point, I tried Ocado, and I put
that's,
my postcode...
That's Waitrose, right? Just for people who aren't on the online shopping thing, Ocado is Waitrose.
Okay,
it's not. It's Ocado.
Yeah, it's
Ocado, but it's basically Waitrose.
No, it's Ocado.
They're a separate company. They do deliver a lot of Waitrose products, but they're not exclusively Waitrose products. We're going to put that in a TM.
Okay.
No, one of those at the bottom, you know.
Yeah. But no.
Small font. Anyway, get on with the story.
All right, sorry. I'm getting on with it. So I went to Ocado, put my postcode in, and it didn't recognize my postcode. So he said, okay, phone this number if it doesn't recognize your postcode. So I phoned the number, and first of all, I didn't get anything at all. It just kind of like rang, and then someone picked up. But it just was silent. So I just thought, sometimes you get like the automated systems get a bit funny. So I phoned it again, and I got some random guy. He was like, who's this? And I was like, I'm calling to sort out my postcode on the Ocado site. He was like, don't know what you're talking about, mate. And I put the phone down. I was like, what? What is this?
The help desk having a bad day.
Probably.
It's always so, possible, yeah, isn't it?
So basically, I gave up on the car, though.
Perhaps they've just outsourced all their telephone support to somebody who wants to make nuisance calls in reverse.
Yeah,
it's like,
I want to creep people out, but I don't want to run up my bill doing so.
So anyway, I'm a bit annoyed at that.
Why could you not write a Grease Monkey script or something to do that? Was it really, really difficult?
Oh, I'll tell you why.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a perfect over-engineered solution for it all, surely.
Oh, come on. That would be generally useful for people.
No, I'll tell you what it is, right? I'll tell you exactly why I couldn't do that. Because the Tesco site, the problem with Tesco is that Tesco...
It won't load in your browser.
Yeah, it would load in my browser.
Why not?
Isn't that more of a what the fuck than...
Right, yeah, and actually, you know what? I've been looking into this, right? It's something to do with the MTU... And I don't understand networking that much to understand what the fucking MTU is.
I don't believe that's to do with the MTU. It's not to do with the MTU, mate.
No, it's definitely, because I looked on the UK.
Somebody's told you that while going, oh, it's the MTU, mate. Not on this side of the street.
No, seriously. On the UK FSN site, it says, cannot get to certain sites, your maximum transmission unit is set too high, you should set it to a lower one. So I'd set it lower. I set it to the one that it recommends, and it still won't work. I mean, I used to have a problem with this before where I couldn't use, couldn't go to the Identica site. You can actually use Identica, but you couldn't actually go to the site. It just would time out. And it's exactly the same as what's happening with Tesco right now. I tried on multiple browsers, multiple machines. I've also got loads of machines here. And the only way it works is if I'm not using the connection, the broadband connection I'm on. It works with my phone, but the problem with my phone is that although I can use it as a modem, using the 3G is really, really slow in my apartment. So I switched it for anyway.
You want to get yourself a MiFi?
Oh, no, I've got a MiFi, and it's on my phone. My phone is a MiFi.
Yeah, Android basically lets you do that.
Yeah.
But you need to crank the hodl handler. I mean, even the handle harder.
Yes.
Because it's so slow.
What I really need is what's that thing that BlackBerry's got? GXM or something? GMX or GMA or something? Where you can, like... It uses your broadband connection as part of the mobile signal.
That's quite a few phones that have that, actually. Someone lent me one when I went to the US, because they said, you know, you can basically get a connection to your UK phone provider over, like, hotel Wi-Fi or something like that, so you're not paying a massive amount to call home.
Oh, that's a good idea, yeah.
Did it work?
No. Yeah, but mostly I didn't bother because I just used Skype.
That's true.
Because the problem is that the moment you go outside of the Wi-Fi zone, or if the Wi-Fi has like a page where you have to like type in details to log onto the Wi-Fi, you know, if it's like an authenticating thing, then you know, then it just doesn't work.
More about that in a minute with my Kindle.
Anyway, I think you're very bad.
Okay, why?
Because I think that there aren't many hackers perhaps doing this at any one time. And if you want data portability, you've got to stand up and be counted and write a script.
But the problem is, Nick, you don't understand. The problem
I do. You're complaining that your router's badly set up. Well, get them around to fix it.
Yeah, that's true.
And then you'll be able to use a browser properly, and then you'll be able to write a script to transfer your favourites, and it's too late now because you've already done it. So I think you're a very bad man.
No, I've got two. I've got two accounts now, so I can always I can still go back and, like, you know, do it, write a script or something.
It seems what you really need is just to for all of those sites, just to have a simple thing to export, literally just a text file with each line as the name of the product.
They're just never going to do that, though, are they? They're just
No. But you could write a little. You could write a little plugin to do it.
Absolutely.
And then just keep that, you know, because that's all you really need is to have your shopping list as a text file. And I don't know about the Sainsbury's site, because Sainsbury's don't deliver. They seem to deliver at the house about 500 yards up the road in one direction and 500 yards up the road in the other direction. But in between that, they don't, for some reason.
Well, they know you live there, Tom.
Avoiding you, Tom.
Yeah, it's those two houses either side have told them.
Yeah, don't deliver.
You don't want to go down there. There's a grumpy bastard lives down there.
Yeah.
I think it might actually just be because for some reason their GPS, like, uplink stops working when they go down the road.
It does, actually, yeah. I've been to your house. It's a black spot around there.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Black spot for everything except radio and two TV channels.
Both
of them porn channels, are they?
Oh. No. Much worse than that. BBC Two.
Oi, leave it alone.
Mary Ryan used to say it was a porn channel.
now you're showing your age.
It did. Yeah. It showed women's ankles.
Singing Detective 4.
So lastly, and this is actually what
I'm still talking.
God. Yes.
It's just a thing called a podcast where we talk. You know?
It's the Ian Forrester Rant-O-Matic, and he's still going.
You just put a penny in and turn the handle, and
I reckon somebody put too much in.
Isn't it?
He's
still going.
Listen, one more thing, right? So the last thing.
One more thing, last week.
Yeah, right.
This is how this goes on for 3 hours, isn't it?
So, stop it! I'm going to start laughing now.
Actually, we edit a lot of this out normally. We go on about not editing, but actually, we do this for hours and hours and hours, and we just cut it out. You know, just banter.
So listen. I've done the Tesco thing and the Savory thing, but lastly, I've also been obviously involved in a lot of dating sites, and oops, we lost someone.
We've lost Kaz. I'll just get
him. Oh no. So anyway, I've been on a lot of dating sites, and I want to.
You threw me off.
No. So I want to port my.
We thought you ran off when Ian started talking about dating sites.
Yeah, well, can you blame me? I've been to his sex talk before, you know.
It's another one of those on Friday.
The original in Liverpool. Yep.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Where we completely hijacked it.
A bit like we're doing it now.
8:53 response goes, yeah, well, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, Ian, you were saying about dating sites.
Yeah, I want to be able to port my profile back and forth between dating sites, and it's still really annoying that it takes... You can't really do that effectively. Now, yeah, I should write a script to do that, and that's something I am looking into doing.
Isn't the difficulty there because all the sites use different details? Like, you know, they'll have different sets of questions because that's how they differentiate themselves, you know, and they'll call things different things. Like, you know, one will call it, you know, say, you know, it's straight seeking a partner, and the other one will say it's heterosexual seeking a woman or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So actually, that's a hell of a lot of a harder job to do than.
I don't think so. I think it exactly needs people like Ian to come along and start. You know, one of my problems with all of this is that we do kind of it. We're constantly going, "Hey, companies, give us more free stuff," yeah. And that's not really fair. We're trying to make money, and we can't do this stuff unless we do try and make money. Nobody's just going to let you know. I can't go to Danny Reimer and say, "Give me millions of pounds for doing nothing," basically. It's just not going to say yes. unless I get him really pissed first. Then maybe I'll have a chance. I don't know. I might try that. Anyway, but the internet is, or certainly the web, you know, HTML, And yeah. It's fairly good data, and then you all moan at us about marking it up semantically, so we all have a go, and it's getting better all the time. So bloody get your fucking finger out and do it yourself, you lazy bastard.
Okay, I will, you...
And, you know, it needs people to self-organise, and Tom's point is a good one, that all the data is different. So what? So you need some movement like microformats that comes along and says, you know, if Ian starts going and, well, I've collected mine like this and I'm here are the data that I'm using, because they're basically a homogenization of the data fields on the two sites I'm on, and then somebody else will come along and say, oh, well, this was a really good idea and I did the same thing, but I chose these data fields. And then, you know, that's the right way. And to hackers, sometimes you go, oh, no, we must massively organize this before we do it. But that would be bad. That would be the wrong thing to do.
Yeah, right? I think the...
just do it.
I think, for instance, this is part of what the semantic web people are doing. Yes, we've got all sorts of formats and stuff layered on top of it, but part of the main thing is actually just getting people to agree to using the same English terms, let alone using the same URIs, but you're using the same, you know, natural language. I mean, getting people to agree that, for instance, something like gender, you know, that you agree to having basically a plain text field where you can put in any string you like, but then you just have it so that if the person puts in anything that looks roughly like male or female, then you just canonicalize that to the string male or female. Like, stuff like that is something people don't think about, because people who start up Facebook or whatever aren't necessarily experts on, you know, the sociology of gender identity or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's getting people to demand this kind of stuff and say, you know, there needs to be a way. We need to get people together and say, here's why we would all benefit from it. You know, demand it, hack it, whatever you want to do.
Well, the
key to me is that we can do all of these things. And so, you know, I'm joking, obviously, when I describe Ian as being deficient. But when you have the opportunity, it does seem, you know, worthwhile to just try and spend because mostly screen scraping something will only take a couple of hours. And if you can do that and get something sensible, you know, only with a couple of hours' efforts. Most sites aren't changing their HTML that much, so, and most of us are trying to be semantic to a degree. So, you know, it should be very relatively long lasting. Screen scraper, you're right. And if you publish it, you know, the methods for publishing this stuff and showing other people that you've actually got something that works, and maybe if you even tell the company, you know, if they respond badly, okay, that's wiped out your couple of hours, but it was only a couple of hours, and they probably won't respond badly, because probably the reason they're not doing it is because they haven't got the time to do it. They would be quite happy for you to do that. They don't care.
Well, also, the thing about it is, I think I'm only going to do it on the free sites, like, you know, Plenty of Fish and OkCupid, really. So, I mean, those guys are quite, you know, they seem to be quite happy about, you know, doing the stuff that, you know, a certain way. So I don't think they would have a problem with that.
No. And but, you know, the point is, from a data portability point of view, it would be easy to look to the companies and say, gosh, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you giving me my data? And that's true, but we're in such a, you know, it's so new, all of this stuff. You can't really expect them to be doing it until there are established ways of doing it, until it's normal. And we can help them get to that point by just doing it for them a lot of the time and putting a script up and saying, you know, no, this is expected. It's expected that we should be able to pull our data from you. And, I've written a script to do it, and other people can use it, and, you know, all of that. But, you know, we need to be part of the solution in that way.
I think one of the things companies could do is, if they're putting out data, is they could put up not necessarily their whole source code, but just the bits of source code which are, you know, producing things which they're not too sure about. So, for instance, what's that company? It's like the Twitter clone that shut down. Pounce.
Pounce.
So somebody said to them, hey, it would be really nice if you could publish Fife. and Leia Culver at Pounce put up a thing, you know, set, got this request, wrote some Python, the whole thing's written in Python and Django, and put up the class, or, you know, the set of code that was being used to produce Foth. And she basically said in a blog post, I'm not totally sure that I'm doing this right, you know, but here's the code. It was pretty easy to do. And so I took a look at it, and, you know, something which, it was a bit of a, you know, a trivial thing. She was encoding something as a string when it should have been encoded as a URI. It looked like a URI, but it hasn't been declared as one. And so, you know, you fix the code and you send it back. Mm. That's kind of sort of the point of open source, is that I could have sat there and explained for, you know, 3 pages what the difference was and why you weren't doing it right, and could have come over as a complete negative arsehole, or I could just fix the code and send a patch back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the time that's possible. I mean, I think that, knowing what I know about the dating industry, I think that we're all just very, very busy trying to make money. Mm. So, you know, there are other places where that's less hard, and or where you're more focused on APIs anyway. You know, there's basically no reason for a dating site to add an API. Almost no reason at all, because, you know, it's all about user experience, and it's not about, you know, data APIs, except for portability. And we understand that people might want to do that, but, you know, it's very difficult to justify spending the time on it. So I could, you know, when companies can, I think they do. Where it's obvious, and, you know, they can break a bit of code out. I tell you for sure that we couldn't break a bit of code out that dealt with any of our data, because it's all so crap. you know, because that's just not what we do. We don't write brilliant code for people to look at and go, oh, yes, that's an interesting data model. Mm. We just, yeah. That's not our business. So, you know, one interesting point I wanted to make at this juncture was, are you all aware that what Google are doing about address books?
No.
Bit of a fuss about what...
Not really, yeah.
No.
What Google are saying, principally to Facebook, is that we are no longer going to allow any calls to Google to request address book uploads, because a conventional thing that lots of sites do, social and dating sites, is to go and ask your Yahoo or your Gmail or your AOL or your MSN for your address book, and then we send out loads of invites to the people that you've got in your address book and say,
oh, yeah, I remember.
The site. And Google is saying to Facebook, we're not going to let you do that anymore unless you do it as well. Unless you have a site to export your data for the user, we're not going to do this anymore. We understand, because we're a site, we need a site that does, you know, uses people's Gmail and AOL and all that, and we understand from Google that they're going to start doing this to everybody, that unless everybody offers an export option, Google will not allow them to pull from Gmail, which is kind of an interesting point. So that's Google, at least, you know, they're trying.
What's your opinion on that, good or bad?
What, my opinion?
I think it's a
brave step of Google. It's unfortunately, it's not going to affect many people, because Google aren't as big an email provider as you might think.
Right. So it's like, I mean, it kind of reminds me of like the share alike thing on Creative Commons. It's like, you know, you can use this if you share it, kind of thing.
In that respect, it seems like a very good thing to do.
Mm. I think it's fair enough, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, I know some people will probably start jumping up and down going, oh, it's Google throwing their weight about, but...
Yeah.
For a good reason, right? Yeah, that's
surely,
a good thing,
like you say, it's in the best interest.
Mm.
It seems it seems like in that whole situation, there's a much easier solution, which is to do what the Foth project suggested many years ago, which is just to throw around a SHA. Because you don't want people spamming everyone's email address. You know, I want to be able to go to a site like Facebook or wherever and say, have a peek at my email contacts and see if I know any of them. But don't bloody well go and spam them all.
Mm.
And so if you're throwing around a SHA, if they don't know who, you give them a SHA, and you also say, you know, don't send any email, and we really don't want you to send email to people who haven't solicited it. And to that extent, that's why we're giving you the SHAR. Although it will piss people off because they'll have to check against the SHAR, store the SHAR of all their registered members in the database, whatever it might be, it might actually, you know, keep people in line a bit more in terms of using the data properly and being a little bit more private about what's going on, a little bit less arsehole-y.
I mean, I'm a staunch anti-Facebook user. I'm not a Facebook user. I never have been, don't want to be. And I still keep getting bloody requests from three or four contacts who have said, oh, come and look at my pictures on Facebook.
Oh, God.
I just keep putting them in the bin. You know, they're perfectly legit contacts of mine that I talk to in other ways, but yeah. I just don't want to go on Facebook to interact with them that way. And every two or three weeks, I get this reminder from Facebook, blah-de-blah blah has offered to share some pictures with you. Please come and look. And it's like, where's the big button to tell Facebook to just bugger off?
Yeah,
there isn't one, you know. This particular email address is not interested. Just piss off and leave me alone.
There should be one, Kat.
There should
be.
I think by law they have to have one.
Mm.
Well, I've never bothered clicking it to find out because I don't want to have to go there, you know?
Right, yeah.
Sorry. I mean, it's not like an unsubscribe because I haven't subscribed to anything.
Yeah.
It's an unsolicited rather than an unsubscribed situation.
The trouble is with that, you know, we do that. We send lots of email to people and we send it repeatedly. But it does work, you know. So you can't say that people don't want it. Certainly it's true that some people don't want it. And, you know, we have...
But there doesn't seem to be an easy way for those people to opt out and say, look, just...
Well, that depends on the system. My understanding is that there should be an easy way for any recipient of an email to opt out of getting them ever again. That's my understanding. And I'm surprised if there isn't one on Facebook. I can't remember what they look like. I mean, I get them and... I'm notoriously rubbish at email, I just throw it away. So I get them and don't really notice. But my understanding is that there has to be, you know, something that you can go to say, just never send me email again. Mm. But, Tom's suggestion, the FOFO idea, is kind of good, but it would never work totally because, one, we want to send you the emails because they work, and two... Users want to send the emails because they want to invite people. They do. They do it all the time. Mm. And we're not tricking them into doing it. You know, some people say, oh, you know, you're doing everything you can to make sure that the email gets sent. And that's true. But at the end of the day, users are trying to contact their friends to bring people into another site. So it is tricky.
And when it all works, and when it's not spammy, it's really, really nice, the whole thing. Like, have you guys seen Reportive? It's a new plugin that's just come out, and it's really quite cool. It's a plugin for Firefox and for some other browsers, I think, too. And it basically is for Gmail. When you're reading stuff in Gmail, it looks up the person whose email you've received and looks up their details on various social networks and goes through all the various APIs like the Google Social Graph API and microformats and FOF and all sorts of other stuff and basically finds all their presence on other social networks. So I've just I've just searched for an email from Ian, for instance, and on the right-hand side of the email, it now has a bar which says, it has a sidebar which has Ian Forrester, then your photo from one of the social networks, and then it's got your location, it says you're in London, which isn't quite right.
Is this reportive.com?
I think so, RAPPORTIVE. It is .com, yeah.
Right. I've gone to reportive.com, which appears to be in French, not rapportive, which is what you're talking about.
Then it has your job titles, which are all pulled in from LinkedIn.
Oh,
it says you're a developer community manager at the BBC, and that you're a founder of dataportability.org, and that you're a senior backstage producer.
This is a bit like EastMad reading Foursquare.
Well, surely this is a really, really quick thing for like stalkers to get stuff on you, isn't it?
Yes, but it's also really useful if you get email from people, you know, if you're a budding social media douchebag or somebody who hangs around them, and you get emails from people, and it pops in all their tweets and links to their Flickr and all this kind of stuff, and it's really useful, because if somebody sends you an email saying, oh, I'm coming to bar camp next week, blah, 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 you've got down the side who they are, how you know them, and you click through and find out what they've been going on about and... you know, while they've been tweeting.
So it's just a lazy man's let me Google that for you.
Yeah. But you discover so much information just by getting all these emails from people, and it just tells you all this useful stuff, and I like it.
Anyway, should we move on?
I'm being positive about something.
That's not right, is it?
I'm not allowing this show.
You're lowering the whole tone of the show there, Tom.
So I've gone to sleep.
You need a Facebook poke, obviously.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. Anyway, should we move on to the next subject?
Do we want to continue this and talk about lanyard? Or should we move on to...
Lanyard. Go for it. No, come on. Talk about lanyard.
So you've got a rant about lanyard, have you?
So I posted a thing up on my blog about lanyard, and people have taken it.
What's with lanyards?
Sorry?
What's all with lanyards?
Well, it's at bar camp.
I agree. They look fantastic with epaulettes, don't they?
Lanyards? Just like Tom Orchid.
Yes,
you can't beat him out of uniform.
So the lanyard thing is kind of like at the weekend at Bar Camp London 8. For those who, you know, there's a lot of people who were like, we must put everything on lanyard, and they were posting up notes on lanyard, were posting all their photos on lanyard, and then almost in the next breath, they're saying, oh, well, I'm really, you know, a bit dodgy about Apple, they don't seem very open, you know, and Microsoft, oh, why would I want to use Windows, it's not open source.
Oh, hold a minute, you mean this lanyard's a site, not... lanyards, as in the thing you hang around your neck.
No, lanyard. L-A-N.
Lanyard with a trend and he dropped the bow. It's Nat and Simon's conference.
Natalie Down and Simon Wilson have built this thing called Lanyard. And it's really nice. And it's a really nice website, and I've got nothing bad to say about it.
Oh. I can't believe it.
Except it feels like people... Sorry. It seems a bit kind of strange that people are rushing headlong to put data into this site and putting so much information in about conferences into this site without even pausing to think. Kaz, yeah, you... Kaz, can you hear us?
Yes, I can still hear you.
Okay. Without feeling, like, a little bit reluctant about it.
I'm sure people are just... I mean, the thing about it is, I never heard of it until you just mentioned it. I think, actually, someone did send me a link from something that happened in Bar Camp London, and it was on this site that I didn't recognise. And so, I guess it's just because Simon and Nat are very prolific in that scene... Like, you know, but in Manchester, I never heard of lanyard, you know. I thought it was bloody, I thought it was lanyard, you know what I mean? So, it's just people supporting their own types, I guess, you know. There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, that's the thing. It just seems like, you know, as I say on the site, all you have to do is put some nice design around something, and then people will throw their data at you, even though they've been, probably in the past, been fucked over by... some site who's misused their data, and it seems like, you know, and I posted up this rant, and I got people who said, oh, you're complaining about putting data on an external site, and you're using Tumblr, oh, ho, 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 and you're also using Discus for your comments, which completely missed the point. The point is that this is all community data. Stuff about, you know, something like Barcamp is community data. It's something that we all kind of feel like we've got something in. It's like an open source thing, you know. And you go to Barcamp, And the whole point is you are sort of encouraged to put the coverage out and put the blog posts and stuff like that out under something like a Creative Commons license so that people can reuse it and collaborate. Right. And yet we're now saying to people, hey, you should go and put all this stuff on a site that's not open source, not open data. It says that you can reuse the data non-commercially. There isn't an API. And I'm not faulting it for any of these things. I'm just saying...
I suspect some of those things should be read with a yet at the end of it.
Yeah. And they probably will be fixed. But I'm just saying it seems that we should be a little bit more reluctant about centralizing stuff. And it seems like a big fault of... not so much a fault of open source, but a fault for us for not thinking that if we're going to centralize community content, we should really be thinking about doing it open source. We should, because I look at something like Lanyon and think, wow, there's loads of really cool data here. I want to fiddle with this. I want to not just download it and fiddle around with it through an API, but I want to be able to say, there's other stuff I want to add to this site. I want to download the code and fiddle with it. Sort of like I can do with Identica.
Yeah.
And it seems that we've really missed a trick here about doing open source web applications, and that it seems like it should be almost, not necessarily be a necessity, but it should be something we should really be encouraging as a community to do open source stuff for all the sort of community conferences and stuff, because that's kind of the ethos we're trying to go for. And I don't want to be ranty and preachy about it, and it comes off sounding really arsehole-ish, and I don't want to come off like
arsehole.
That. I just think we might be able to do it better.
I think it immediately struck a chord with me, because I know a lot of people know Nat and Simon and really respect them, but I don't know them. And I don't know where Lanyard's coming from, and it does seem that people are happier to put a lot of effort into putting data into that. I've given a couple of talks and in the last month or so or 6 weeks, and people have attended them, have put them on Lanyard, and I'm fine with that.
Yep.
But that's it, a whole bunch of effort that people are going to, and it doesn't. I'm not clear on what the business model for Lanyard is at all. Simon and Nat just doing that out of the love of the community? I don't know.
They've said that they want to turn it into a business of some sort, and that they'd like it to be, to reach the point where it's a sort of primary source of income for the two of them. I do trust them.
Right, but that's a mistake. You see, why would you do that? They want to be a company. It's unfair to them, but two, it's unfair to yourself.
If they're going to
be a company, that data is an asset, and they have every right to look after it. You have given it to them with no strings attached, because there are no strings, as far as I can see.
Yeah.
The other interesting thing about crowdsourcing this is a friend of mine speaks regularly on accessibility issues, and she looked at her own profile, which is, if you look at your profiles when you're a speaker, you come up with various tags about the most popular things that you speak about, which is generated somehow from the data that the other users have put in. And she was saying that some of the tags that have appeared against her name are completely anathema and, in fact, alien to what she's talking about, and she can't get rid of them, and she doesn't know how to. Because it's data that's been crowdsourced by lots of people who've put their interpretation on what she's talking about, and she looked at one of them. I think it said something like social media, and it's like, well, I'm not a social media expert. I talk about some aspects of social media and how people with disabilities interact with it, but I'm not a social media. Social media is not the right tag for me and what I do. But that had come up on her profile because of the way that the data had been crowdsourced with everybody else, and I don't know whether there's an easy way to then go into the system and say, look, okay, this is maybe what other people think I do, but it isn't what I do.
Yeah, and that's obviously a matter for Nat and Simon to say yes or no, depending on their business model, right? I mean, they might turn around and say no. And who knows? But it certainly struck a chord with me, Tom, because you're absolutely right that there is a sort of central... One, I think that a lot of the people complaining about Apple are doing it blindly. They're not really thinking about it. And two, similarly, they're not really thinking about when they upload data to Lanyard. But, you know, they just do it because it's cool.
Yep.
Now, you know, cool is the enemy of sense.
Yeah.
At one point, Upcoming was the cool place to be, and look what's happened
there.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's just deserted it in droves.
And that's because
geeks are kind of after that fickle. Kind of place. No. I was thinking, you know, people are crying out for a place that they can find out what's going on, find out what their mates are going to, and because, if you like, the critical mass of people have stopped you, well, critical mass of people in UK geekdom, if you like, have virtually stopped using that, they're now looking for something else. Yeah. Because they found Lanyard, which, ooh, look, it's written by geeks that we know, everybody's on that bandwagon. And I'm not necessarily saying it's a bad thing, but that's why I think everybody's suddenly defected to it.
And for me, if you take away the fact that it's written by Natalie and Simon, who, as I said, are perfectly nice people, it's the fact that that isn't enough for me to trust something. Mm. I'm inherently distrustful by nature because I see perfectly nice, well-intentioned people doing completely arsehole things for whatever reason, whether it's, you know, money or ideology or, you know, religion or whatever the fuck it is. You talk to people and they're perfectly nice and then they go and do something really arsehole-y and you can't trust anyone. You can trust them, but you can say it's the whole, like, Cold War thing, trust but verify. You trust, but you still should have really high demands from people and especially for community co-created resources.
Well, it's about the idea of trust is just so strange when you're talking about data and stuff like that. I mean, the first thing I should say is that I have just been saying, for fuck's sake, you could go and write a script to, you know, pull this data out of Tesco and Sainsbury's and places like that. So clearly you can do that with Lanyard.
They provide some very alpha APIs and they have said that they will be providing a full API.
And now, you know, hopefully they will, but something might prevent them from doing that. They might be approached by somebody who gives them an offer they can't refuse. They might sell it. And they might say, even to themselves, we would never sell this yet. This is our project. But, you know, somebody comes along.
But an offer you can't refuse is an offer you can't refuse, isn't it?
Exactly. So, you know, but what I was going to say about trust is, you know, trust is a crazy idea when you're talking about data and businesses and stuff like that because, you know, it might be imperative to them to do something that really offends you that they would never understand in a million years would offend you.
Yeah.
People have got such differing values. Mm. And that's okay. Why would anybody want to normalise that in society? You can't possibly, and if you want to, you're crazy. So stop just arbitrarily trusting people, work out what you can and cannot accept about your data, and either put it in somewhere or not, or if you do and you worry about it, then back it up with scripts. But don't do things blindly, please. I mean, especially geeks, you're supposed to be thinking about this stuff. You're supposed to be clever, so be clever and think. I should really have Charlie give that message, shouldn't I?
I think you're right. I've been thinking about this a lot with my Dreamscape. I've finally settled on a platform and I'm starting to put my own stuff in there and I'm trying to building stuff that so that people don't need to know anything about me, but they know that I'm not going to do certain things with their data, you know.
Now, but if you get an offer, you can't refuse, you know.
No, but it's something you can do, like, you know, you can make certain data Creative Commons so that, you know, you can't go back on that, you know what I mean?
Mm. Exactly. You need to put the constraints in right at the beginning so that you're being as open as you can possibly be about the constraints you will accept on yourself.
Yeah.
And that's what the problem is with Lanyard. It's, as Tom is pointing out, they say, oh, yes, well, we're going to be free and open and there'll be APIs and there'll be this and that, but they haven't actually up front committed to anything like that. And I'm sure that's just a mistake that, you know, that they haven't prioritised that, and they, I'm sure that they will, because Matt and Simon are such a big part of the hacker community. But, you know, it comes back to the fact that you, why would you assume that anyone is going to do that? I'm pretty positive that they will, but I can't be absolutely positive, so I'm not going to actually spend a lot of my time tagging data for them until they've done it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, for me, it's prompted me to think, well, what I think we really ought to be doing is sort of trying to build things like more web applications under a sort of Ethero GPL type license, where the whole project, you know, is licensed in such a way that if you don't like it, you can get all the data out. If you don't like it, you can host an instance yourself. You can download the full source code of the live running version of the site and make and work on it like an open source project. Just because things are hosted on the internet doesn't mean that they shouldn't be open source. You know, people, you know, will bang on at Microsoft or Apple or whatever for producing closed software. Surely stuff on the web that people we know make shouldn't be immune from the same criticism unless we're being hypocritical.
No, I think that's right. And it comes back to, it's the same thing as we were saying, you know, 5 minutes ago, that companies aren't going to do this. They just don't prioritise that stuff. You know, a lot of the time, I can't release my, you know, I'd love to release all of Wimi. I would. I'd love to. Mm. But I can't, because it's full of passwords and, you know, stuff like that, because we're lazy. So I can't just take it and shove it on GitHub.
But also, it's not a community. The thing which I find slightly objectionable about, you know, the whole push to have everything on Lanyard is the fact that it's community data. It is the content equivalent of open source. It's stuff which we're doing as a community. We're saying you should share this stuff. You should come to Barcamp and learn stuff and share stuff and video stuff and put it upline. And then we're putting it all on a site controlled by a small handful of people. That seems completely inconsistent with the stated mission of what we're doing.
To be fair to them, they haven't said, hey, community, we've built this thing for you to put your data into.
No.
It's other people saying that.
Yeah.
It's not Simon.
No.
It's not a bit of business.
And this is not intended at them. It's intended at all sorts of services. It just happened that this was the straw that broke the camel's back for me, to say we should be doing more that's open source rather than just doing something because it's the current hot thing on Twitter.
Should we move on?
Yeah. Next, Zian would say.
Next!
Kaz, let's bring you in.
Go on then.
You want to talk about Seagate hard drives.
Yeah, well.
Having
been burnt in the past with losing data, about 18 months ago, I went and bought a Seagate drive to back up my stuff. My photographs and all my other precious files that I don't want going down the tubes. And within about 2 weeks, it was making nasty clicky noises.
Kaz?
All right, okay. So I went to Currys. I found a drive that I quite liked and thought, I wonder if I can get it cheaper online. So I checked quickly on my iPhone, and sure enough, the listing came up for PC World. Which is, incidentally, the store just across the street from where I was already. And it said, if I order it online, reserve it online, I can pick it up from the shop and I'll get £20 off. And I thought, well, there must be a catch here somewhere. So I went to the car park, I ordered it online, toddled across to the shop, and showed them my receipt from the website, because I'd been stupid and filled in the wrong email address and it hadn't come, the confirmation. And the guy went, what's your name? I told him. And they went, oh, I'll go and get it for you. And it took the time it took for him to literally go and get the thing off the shelf, it was all the time I had to wait. and I got 20 quid off just for the for having reserved one online before I walked into the shop, which was just bizarre.
And you get added, you get added consumer protection.
Do I?
Yeah.
Why
is that?
Yeah. Well, because if you buy something online, did you buy it online?
Ah, no. No. You see, that you don't buy it online, you reserve it, and then you pay when you get to the shop.
I see.
But even so, you know, you've got 24 hours to go and pick it up.
I've got a little rant about that, actually, about website, about retailers and how they are completely failing to actually realise the one thing which they have, which websites don't have, which is shops. And you have all these sites, and they tell you, oh, yeah, you can order stuff from us. And it's like, why would I want to order stuff from you? I can order it from Amazon cheaper. The one thing you do have, which all these other places don't have, is actual shops. So why don't you actually tell me on the site what you've got in your shops so that I can go and buy it from one of your shops?
Well, yeah. This was a positive of the PC World thing. It told me, it said, which shop do you want to pick it up from? If they've got stock, go and get it.
Yeah.
So that that did work for me.
Mm. Plenty of them don't, though, and there are a few which do. I mean, I know Dan W., who's been on the show, told me that IKEA do and a few other places do, but, you know, you want to go and buy a camera and you want to use it now, you know, ideally being able to go onto their website and seeing, you know, which branches have got it is something which should really be done.
Have you ever worked in a shop, lad?
Yeah, it's
awesome. I mean, have you ever had to get up at 6 in the morning and crawl up the high street to work in a shop? I'll warrant you haven't. Or you'd know.
Or you'd know. I were a lad.
Or you'd know that the big problem is stock control.
Stock control?
They can't control their stock.
Well, the problem is, right, I don't know why I did that. Why did I do that accent? I'm not really sure.
I have no idea.
I fancy
the Yorkshire accent, yes, marvellous.
Fancy it. The big problem is that most shops are just, you know, just chaotic in terms of stock control. So why do Smiths and all those people, why can't they compete with Amazon? Because Amazon have got proper stock control, but that's because they don't have a legacy of all these stores and all this.
Control and stores are mutually exclusive?
I think they pretty much are. Yeah, I mean, clearly it is possible because IKEA do it, but they are
Swedish.
Yeah, they are very different.
But yeah, I mean, it seems completely bizarre to me that the one thing which could actually differentiate them from ordering stuff online, they have completely failed to actually do. Which, you know, there must be plenty of people.
Because it's hard. It's not easy. It's really, 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 really difficult.
Mm. And, we're not just talking about, you know, low-ticket items. If you're talking expensive items like, you know, cameras, consumer electronics, etc., that's the sort of thing where actually being able to go, if you're going to spend 200 quid on a camera or 500 quid on a camera or whatever it might be, being able to go and physically see the thing and maybe have a little play around with it is the difference.
And then go and buy it online.
is the difference between buying something and not buying it for a lot of people. And, you know, and the retailers are missing a trick here. And somebody was telling me it's because they often organise it internally so that the stuff on the web is either a completely separate operation from the retail side of it, or that, even worse, they're in competition.
Yeah.
And that's... there's no motivation for the website of it to promote the retail, and vice versa.
Because it's too hard. Because it's too hard to do. Because of stock control.
There's actually a PC World outlet place, just literally, I can look out the window, I can see it, I can almost hit it with like a, with a ball. Anyway, so...
No. You've seen the Twitter joke troll this week. This is not allowed.
Okay. Well, all right. So, anyway, the nice about the PC World outlet thing is that it's got all this rubbish. That's like, well, stuff from PC World, Dixon's and Curry's, that couldn't sell in the shop, and it's just piled up. It's like, it literally is like, if it didn't have PC World on the cover or whatever, I'd have thought it was just some junk shop. And the stock control in there must be a joke. You know,
sorry, when I see a shop with PC World on the outside, I think it's a junk shop.
Oh. Okay. Well, compared to this, yeah, this is like a jumble sale, pretty much. They got stuff piled on top of all types of weird and wonderful things. It's crazy, the stuff
that they got any lamps? I need a lamp.
They have got lamps, actually.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I was looking for a Freeview Plus box.
Hello.
But yeah, it's crazy. It's hello.
I'm trying a different Wi-Fi this time.
Cool. Okay. Yeah, the stock control has got to be a joke in that shop. Absolute joke. You know.
Which shop?
Oh, I was saying that there's a PC Curry's outlet store next to me.
Mm.
And you go in there, and literally every day they've got new stuff, and it's just basically everything that couldn't be sold anywhere else in the country gets sent to this store, and it's just piled up on top of each other. I should take a picture of it one day, because it is crazy. I've never seen anything like it.
Is it everything that they can't sell?
Everything. Yeah, everything they can't sell.
Well, like
where
fish.
Old tech goes to die.
Old tech.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, pretty much.
Not onions, then.
No. It's all tech. It's all curry stuff and PC World stuff and Dixon.
Is there
stuff.
Any good stuff in there though? Do you buy stuff?
Yeah, I got. Oh yeah, so I got a picture frame. Yeah. And to be fair, it's got a massive scratch in the front. Of
nice.
But hold on. It's about.
He's only got the singing butler in it. It's fine.
It's a Philips picture frame, and it's, how long is it? It's about 10 inches wide, and it still works fine. I got it for £10. And I was like, bloody hell, I'll do that.
But every time you look at it, you think, I really need to clean my camera lens.
I got another one as well. I got a Samsung one, which is, it's smaller, it's about 8 inches, and picture frame, works fine, no scratch on it. I had to take it back because it didn't have the stand, but they took it back and got another one. And
from cardboard, couldn't you? That would have done.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, well, I wanted the stand because I paid the money for it. And it cost, it cost 25 quid. You know, I think they just make up the prices as they go along. They just go, oh, well, fuck it. Here we go, you have 25 quid. You know. There you go, lads. Go bugger off then, you know.
And if you're daft enough to pay it, they'll give it to you.
Pretty much. They have not guaranteed it, though. That's the thing. They'll guarantee it still, so... Yeah, it's not bad.
Well, I'm disappointed. Because you work for the BBC, I've always had an image of you sort of at home doing BBC Makes.
You didn't get a BBC mic
from there,
did you?
No, I did not. Anyway,
if you can find a BBC Micro anywhere, my dad would be interested, I'm sure. Model B.
eBay.
I've actually, two things actually about BBC Micro. I was using the BBC Micro as an analogy in a talk about functional programming. And my first slide at the weekend was of the BBC Micro with some code written in the BBC Basic interpreter. People walked in thinking it was going to be a functional programming thing and then walked out because they thought it must have gone into the wrong room.
BBC Micro for idiots, yeah.
But also, I downloaded a BBC Micro emulator for OS X, and it's actually slower than the JVM. It uses more memory.
What?
Probably slower than the BBC Micro, isn't it?
No, it's because it's really complicated. It lets you emulate so much geeky stuff about the BBC Micro hardware. You can tell it, like, which speed of disk drive you want it to emulate, so that certain games which stopped working or went super fast when it got the high-speed disk drive and things like that. So,
high-speed disk drive?
Yeah.
Don't say that with such scepticism.
you have to remember things were still advancing in terms of technology then, rather than
you were lucky to have a disk drive rather than a tape drive.
This was many years later. I got the disk drive, and it's only because the bloke next door had moved on to these funny devices called PCs.
Is that single-sided or double-sided?
I can't remember.
My Atari had like a single-sided disk drive.
I had a double one though, so you could put two disks in and copy between them.
Oh yes, the best sort.
Quite useful.
Yep.
Next subject.
Flickr and photography and stuff like that.
It's not so much a rant about the tech or the equipment, so much as about other users, really.
Uh-oh.
Bastards.
Exactly. I mean, cameras, for a start, right? I've got some nice cameras. They're not cheap. They produce really nice results in terms of the technical quality.
Which models?
I have a Canon EOS 7D.
Okay.
Which I recently replaced from being a Canon EOS 30D, which I've had for 3 or 4 years.
Yep.
And I've got the Panasonic GF1, which is the Micro Four Thirds compact with the 20mm pancake lens. Very nice. Mm-hmm. But people see my photography, my pictures, and they go, "Oh, that's really good. You must have a really good camera." Well, when was the last time you heard someone asking a writer, "Oh, what pen did you use to write that book with?"
NaNoWriMo, you know, the National Novel Writing Month, you see it all the time. People, instead of saying, what book am I going to write, they say, what kind of word processor should I use?
Bad workmen always blame their tools, basically. But, you know, it just pisses me off that they don't think, well, you might have been taking... I mean, I've been taking photographs for about 25 years, so I've had quite a lot of practice. And it's not that practice and that sort of skill that I've built up over that time that they're saying. It's like, oh, you must have a really good camera, that's why you get good pictures.
Yeah, but I tell you what, honestly, Kaz, right, I just switched from, I'm not sure what you call them, those, you know, I had a...
A crappy compact?
It wasn't that bad. it wasn't quite that bad. It was,
Did you have some sort of, like, prosumer thing? Like,
S3IS, right? Mm. I had that, and I switched to, I've now got a Nikon 40X. What? What was that?
Nothing. There's tremendous rivalry between Nikon and Canon users.
Okay.
Although I said, please don't use the C word, I wasn't talking about Canon today. I was talking about something else. but I've been a Canon user for about 25 years, so that's why I'm in that camp. But I don't slag off people who use Nikons in any more than a teasing way, because it's not about the camera, it's about who's behind it, frankly.
It's Vim and Emacs, a lot more expensive. Exactly. Whereas I'm a Pentax user, which means that everyone just looks at me in a patronising way, as if I'm still using Notepad.
Exactly.
What I was going to say is, I mean, I think you are right. Don't get me wrong; you are perfectly right. But I did have the I switched from the Canon S3 whatever to this Nikon, right? Which is digital SLR. Makes a huge difference to the actual pictures. I mean, the picture quality is amazing.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The technical quality, yes, that is very true. But the technical quality is not the only thing that makes a decent picture.
No, you're right about that. Yeah, yeah. The framing.
You see an awful lot of a jump from a little compact camera to an SLR, and therefore you think, oh, you know, this camera's really good.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's got a massive sensor compared to the tiny little postage stamp thing that the compacts have got. And it may well make better decisions if you put it in automatic mode than the compact would have done. But ultimately, if you give, you'll hopefully learn more with it because you can do more with it and you can tell the camera sometimes, no, you're wrong, I want to do this thing that you're suggesting is completely nuts, but I want to do that for an artistic reason. And you've got much more control about that. Whereas, you know, with the compact, it'll just do it and you'll have to put up with the results, more or less.
Yeah, to be fair, I've not really messed with the manual settings that much, but, I mean, I also just bought a new lens as well. I bought a... Oh, God, I think it's like a... is it 18 to 300 or something? Or
Whoa, that sounds like a monster.
It does... It's like... It goes out quite far. I love it, though.
It's not the length of your lens that counts, Ian.
I know, I love it. The only thing I realise is that, obviously, you can't take pictures of people really close up, because it's like, it's so thin. But yeah, I just found...
Because it gives him a black eye.
Yes, there's a 3 mile exclusion zone around him. Otherwise, he's going to hit people with the end of his lens.
Oh my god!
That's what she said.
Okay, should we move on? I think you're right, Dad. Yeah.
So I don't use Flickr as much as I probably should, and I basically the only times I ever use it is for about 3 days after it tells me that my prior account has expired. And usually
I use
that,
Flickr a lot.
Yeah,
so are the community, like, everyone says the community is really, really nice and everything, but it seems like there must be an undercurrent of complete arseholery that goes on.
There is, of course there is, because then every community is like that. If you get in with the right crowd, so to speak, they can be really positive, they can give you great feedback, and you can learn loads from them. But there will always be the twits in certain groups that just stick awesome at the end of your picture. And you think,
that's true.
You know, I hate the word awesome in as much as it's been overused to death. And if I ever use the word awesome, it's because this thing is bloody awesome, right? but it's like, awesome, about 4 or 5 comments all the same. Because they're, you know, if you put your picture in a group that insists on you commenting before you can post, or you know, post 1 and comment on 3 sort of thing, this is where you get the crap comments. Because people are just putting any old thing down so that they fulfil the criteria for not getting their picture chucked out of a group.
Some of those things, they kind of remind me of a back in the old days of LiveJournal, they used to have groups of people who were attractive and you had to apply. You had to, like, take a photo of yourself and send it off. And then this sort of small coterie of people would decide whether or not you're attractive enough to be part of the group.
No. Wow.
And then of course there'd be huge amounts of drama when people got rejected, and it would cause absolute hilarity because, you know, various sort of what ought to be private deliberations about who's pretty and who's not go public.
Well, to be fair, it's not usually that bad, but, you know.
Right, yeah.
The quality of comments in certain groups is pretty ropey, basically.
Yeah.
But the flip side to that, as with any community, is, you know, there are some groups which are really fantastic. I've made some great friends. I've carried on with my photo a day project, which was supposed to stop at the end of 2008, and whoops, I forgot, and today is day 1050.
Well, got 3 minutes.
So, you know, that's the sort of place you can be if you find the right people, but it is quite tough.
Yeah, I think actually, I do use Flickr, and especially now I've got a digital SLR, I've been uploading a lot more stuff to off of Flickr. I also use a site called SoundCloud, and I kind of think of it as the...
Isn't that for sound?
Yeah, all right, yes.
Sorry.
It's a sound equivalent of Flickr, and actually the groups are the same, you know,
for mixtapes and stuff.
Not just for mixtapes, like all types of sound, which is a bit annoying because I upload my mixes and people are uploading like 1 second samples and stuff. But you know, it's interesting because you get those groups, once again, where you do learn a lot of stuff, where DJs do kind of kind of go around and contribute stuff. And you do, you learn so much. But then there's other groups where it's just random bollocks, you know. And people are commenting, going, "Oh, well, that's really nice." And you're like, "What's really nice? You know, what, the whole mix? The first 5 minutes? The first 10 minutes? What? You know?"
Mm. Anyway. I mean, the other thing that does annoy me is people that just use Flickr as a sort of their backup bucket, as I like to call it. I was like, just, you know, if you've got 3 or 4 pictures of it, almost identical, just choose one. We don't need to see all of them.
Yeah.
And give it a title that's unique. Eventually, I'm not looking at you, Ian Forrester, at all. you're not the only person, I have to say. But, you know, it's just nice. And some people, no explanation, no description, and you're just thinking, well, what is it? Where is it? I've got no idea. I'd really like to know. You could put a comment on there, but it's just like, oh, why don't you just tell me where it is instead?
Okay, to be fair, To be fair, Kaz, right? Saved you about 500 pictures, right? I was trying to pick where to put my, I scanned in loads of negatives, right?
Mm.
And I decided in the end to upload them to Facebook because, although I hate Facebook, it just didn't make sense to put it on Flickr.
Well, the other thing, you know, put it on Flickr, but make most of them private. If that's what you want to use it as a backup bucket,
yeah,
you don't have to see them. And just make the nicest half dozen public. And then people will go, wow, look at the quality of your pictures. They're so much, you know, head and shoulders above everybody else. Because that's what I do. I only show you about, at most, the best 10% of what I take.
Right. See, the thing about the problem I've got is that I tend not to make... I've got nothing on Flickr which is private.
Mm.
It's all public. I don't upload it. If I want to have it private, I'll just keep up my own hard drive.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough. But a lot of people use Flickr as their backup.
Yeah.
And that just drives me mad.
Yeah, I couldn't do that. That drives me nuts as well.
Mm.
Anyway, yeah, I think you are right, and I should probably... use more unique titles. I do use good tags there, I reckon.
Well, I do appreciate that, you know, when you first upload something from a conference, you may have 20, 30, 40, 50 pictures, all with this conference title. But if you get time later on, if you can go back and say, you know, this is Joe Blogg sitting doing X, Y, Z, then that's really helpful.
That's true. Okay. Point taken.
Rant over, darling.
I will sort it all out. I will sort it out.
You're going to sit on Flickr and you're going to make sure every single picture on there has got a unique title now. I'll go after Ian.
Okay. Next. Who's next?
Next.
I think we might be done unless anyone's got anything else they want to jump in and say.
Oh, well, I had one last thing.
Go for it.
Sorry. Okay. So I got a Kindle, and I love my Kindle.
Yeah.
But one thing that really bugs me is two things that bug me.
The many things that bug you.
The many things that bug me. So these two things on Kindle is the Kindle is great, right? I got Kindle free, but there's one thing is that the Wi-Fi only connects to Wi-Fi that's got access to the internet.
Right.
Okay, that doesn't make sense, right? But if you hit a site that, or hit a Wi-Fi point that has, a portal or something like that in front of it, it doesn't connect. It won't connect.
That's presumably because they want to protect you from the fact that you don't have a browser.
No, but there is a browser, and the browser's actually very good. That's the killer thing. It's actually based on WebCare. So that's the weird thing. There are some... I did find that the Open Zone stuff does go... It does actually say you're about to hit a site... You're about to hit... this Wi-Fi point can only be used if you can log in, and it goes to the browser and allows you to log in. But other sites, it doesn't, which is really weird. And the other thing is, what's the other thing I was going to say? Amazon's business model winds me up a little bit because they expect everyone to register all their blogs and their sites with Amazon themselves, and then they provide you a copy of the site that you kind of pay for. It's weird. I don't understand it, right? As a blog owner, I register my blog with Amazon, and then when someone subscribes to my blog on the Kindle store, then I would get a very small amount of money. But
keep the rest.
Yes,
bastards.
I know exactly. But this is the kind of thing, right? I'm using a piece of software called Calabra, which automatically, you put it at any site, and it turns it into a book. So, and then obviously when you plug the Kindle in, which is really nice, it turns it into a mass storage device, so you just drag the file over and that's it. So there's no need for it. So I don't understand this kind of crazy model that they have, you know? Anyway, it just winds up a little bit.
I have to say, with the Kindle thing, it's you've got one, Yeah. And Terence Eden has recently bought one. And the rest of the time, you're both going on about how, you know, closed systems are bad, and, you know, the Apple ecosystem is evil, and all that. And it's just quite amusing to watch you luxuriate in this closed platform.
No, I'll tell you what it is, right? Okay, honestly, I could put this whole vibe about Apple, but I'm not going to, right? So basically, I bought the Kindle, right? And to be fair, I have registered it, but I could use it straight away. I could literally plug it into my computer, my Linux PC.
Are you about to say it just works? Because if you say that,
no, I'm not going to say that.
Come to Manchester and cut your head off.
No, I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say I plugged it into my laptop, and it came as a mass storage device, and I could drag the files over, and I could see the files on the Kindle.
So what you're saying is that your principled objection to the iOS ecosystem is that you don't like iTunes.
Yeah, pretty much. When the device says to me, before I even, I buy it, and it says on the screen, plug me into iTunes, because it will not work otherwise, that is, I'm sorry, but that is like a cardinal sin, you know? That's wrong. That's wrong on so many levels.
You see, I just got my laptop out, plugged it in, and it worked, and then...
No, I'm not saying that.
And then it's fine.
Hello again. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that, you're unlike...
Is anybody there?
Yes.
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah.
Unlike the iPhone and the iPod, it has to be plugged into iTunes to work, to operate. Yeah, and that's the problem.
Okay. I agree. Yeah. I don't like the Kindle either, but that's because I don't read.
No, and you know what? Honestly, I don't really like the Kindle. I had a Sony before, and I didn't really like the Kindle, but now they've got it to a point where I think it's open enough for me to do most of the stuff I need to do, and I can get around. Hello. And I can get around and do most of the stuff.
This is very annoying.
So, I don't know. It's still a broken device as far as I'm concerned. There's a lot that needs to be done, but it's getting better, and it's got to a point where I can now acceptably use it without kind of throwing out the window every 5 seconds, you know? Kindle 1, Kindle 2 were probably very different. They were probably much more lockdown system. So.
Okay. Should we close up?
Yep.
Right. No. Do you want to rant about anything else?
Me? No, yep. I think I'm done. Well, unless I have a tiny mini rant et about
Skype.
you.
Sorry?
Occasionally, I want to print something from Chrome, Google Chrome.
Yep.
Can't. Well, I can, but I don't know what I'm getting because there's no print preview.
Or some Windows.
Yeah.
Yep. Have you filed a bug about it?
Can't be asked.
That's a whole rant in itself. You've got to put a bug in.
What do you mean? It's not a bug. There is just no print preview in there.
A bug. Well, it's a lack of a feature. It's a lack of an important feature.
Yeah, which Thingbat thought that it was necessary not to have that feature?
They probably just overlooked it because they're a bunch of Linux and Mac using FreeTard Windows haters.
you know what? Let me tell you a story, actually, just quickly. You know that Photoshop 5.5
CS5?
Not CS5, no.
Oh, 5.0?
Yeah, 5.0, right?
Right.
It came out, with no print option. Adobe forgot to put it in. And that's why they brought out 5.02. That's how bad things can really get. Yeah. You know? So it isn't just us retards. It's also the commercial market as well. Also,
who would have thought it of a professional company like Adobe?
You wouldn't believe
sarcasm oozing from every pore there, Nick.
at Barcamp this weekend, so Adobe sponsored it partly. They sponsored quite a lot, and you wouldn't believe the amount of ribbing they got. And there was this poor guy there. I just felt sorry for him at the end. You know, he was there just like, even like Cristiano, who's been on this show, even slagged them off in the intro session as a way of thanking them for sponsoring the event.
No way.
Oh my God.
I wouldn't know. I was up at reception checking people in. But
yeah, he made a joke about something like, you know, Adobe has been sponsoring this, but it won't run on your Mac or something like that.
Ouch.
Oh my God. Was Julie Tully there?
Sorry?
Julie Tully? She's the community manager at Adobe.
No, it was a developer guy they sent along. I forget his name. He was talking about something related to Flash. But anyway, Ian, do you want to take us out? I think we're all done.
Yeah. So now all the ranting is over, and we've had our ups and downs. But you guys won't know because it will all be edited out like magic.
Especially the bits where we made really racist and sexist remarks.
Yeah.
And that bit.
Anyway, so, should we say bye to the thank you very much, audience, for listening. So, say goodbye to the audience, starting with Tom.
Bye.
With Nick.
I'm a bit disappointed. I was expecting sailing by with all the build-up this got. But, okay, cheerio.
You can say something more if you want to.
No, that's fine. I was just expecting you to whistle sailing by.
Okay. By Kaz, our first female voice on Tech Grumps.
Yes, your first grumpy old woman. There you go. Bye. I better say goodbye before Skype drops out again.
And myself, Ian Forrester. Goodbye, and thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Yep, see ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Okay.
Thank fuck, that's over.